So, good evening, everyone. I was thinking of starting tonight's talk by telling you a story. It's a very old story about King Solomon, who was lived long, long time ago and was a very wealthy and powerful and rich king. And one day, King Solomon decided to test the loyalty of one of his ministers by giving this minister an impossible task. And the task for the minister was to find a ring, a magic ring, that has the power of making a happy man sad and a sad man happy. So the minister took off, started looking for this sort of a magic ring, and looked and looked, and several months passed, and he didn't find it anywhere. But one day the minister was walking in the poorest neighborhood of Jerusalem, and saw a store selling jewelry. He had been visiting hundreds of the stores like that before, but he decided to go to this one as well. And he walked in and he asked the jeweler, "Do you have this sort of a magic ring in your store?" And this particular jeweler said, "Yeah, sure, I do." And the jeweler took a plain golden ring and quickly made an engravement on the ring and gave the ring to the minister, and the minister took the ring to the king. The king looked at the ring and read the engravement, and it said, "This too shall pass. This too shall pass." And the story goes that at that moment, King Solomon realized that all his wisdom, his tremendous wealth, and his power are fleeting things, because one day he will be nothing but dust. So the engravement on the ring in the story tells us about central truth in life, about impermanence. Impermanence is also an important part of the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha taught that all conditioned phenomena are impermanent, all our normal experiences are impermanent, and the Pali word for impermanence is anicca. And it's so interesting, like if you look around, like if you're looking for impermanence, you see it everywhere, like no matter where you look. Like I was working on this talk this afternoon before dinner, and when I went to get dinner, which was Enestam summer soup. And over the years, the recipe for that particular soup has changed quite radically, even though the name has stayed the same. Like there were no potatoes and peas in the original soup, and it wasn't vegan and so on. And like even if the recipe for that soup or any other food here wouldn't change, like I've been coming here so many years that I know, and it's the same foods that keep appearing, they are always different. They are always different depending on the cooks, depending on the vegetable choppers, depending on the quality of the ingredients, depending on everything. And I would like to invite you to try out an experiment. I would ask you to close your eyes for a moment. Bring your attention to hearing. And you can perhaps hear a sound that your mind labels as traffic, traffic on the highway. But if you let go of that label and start listening to the actual sound, does it stay the same or not? Does it keep changing? If you like, you can open your eyes now. So I'm guessing that you observed some change in the sound. It's like so typical what our minds do is that our minds put a label on something, that highway traffic, and that's it. Mind puts it in a box, in a clean box, and we fail to actually be with the experience and notice how it changes. And the same applies to all the physical sensations. Like if your mind is stable and steady and you look at your physical sensations, they keep changing. They can change so many times per second. Maybe something feels like it stays the same, but I bet it won't stay exactly the same day after day and week after week and year after year. If you find any kind of a sensation that stays exactly the same year after year, please let me know. I would be very interested in hearing about that. You know, if we look out, we could see the weather changing a lot. Sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's not. Sometimes the sun is shining, sometimes it's not. But again, we have all these concepts for the weather that are pretty inaccurate descriptions of reality. Like in truth, there's some change happening all the time. The clouds are moving, the clouds look different, the wind is different. And if we reflect on a human life, life of a single individual, in the course of that life, we gain so much and we also lose so much. By the way, can you hear me all right in the back? Okay, great. If you stop hearing at any point for any reason, please wave and I try to pay attention. Some years ago I read a book called What I Loved by Siri Huustvedt. In Finnish it's called Kaikki mitä rakastin. And it doesn't say on the back cover or on the front cover that this book is about impermanence, but to me it kind of captures the teaching of impermanence. It's a really lovely book and it's about a professor of art history who lives in New York. And at first the professor starts gaining great things in his life. He meets a good friend, he gets another really good friend, he finds a wife, he gets a son, and so on. But at some point he starts losing things. And one might imagine that it is a really depressing book. But actually, it's not true at all. It's to me, the book is like somehow really beautiful and poignant description of the human life, all the gains and all the losses we all experience. And talking about relationship, even like every relationship between two people changes all the time. Like we again might make all kinds of labels, like a friend or an enemy or having trouble or being happy, but in truth, the dynamics of the relationship, of every relationship, are in constant flux. And human life is very, very impermanent too. You know, if you look around, everybody here on this retreat and at the Friendship Inn will be dead in 150 years. And actually everybody who you've ever met and everybody who you've ever seen on TV or read about in the paper, in 150 years they will all be dead, every single one of them. And there will be a whole planet full of new people. Nobody is the same, everybody is different. On even a bigger scale, civilizations are changing. You know, there's been Mayans and Greeks and Romans and many others before us. And it's very easy to feel that our civilization is the best and this is going to last forever. But it really might not be so. I read about the Mayans a little bit in a paper, and it said that the Mayan civilization lasted for about 2,000 years before disappearing, and the scientists apparently still don't know why they disappeared. So anything could happen to us too. We are actually very fragile. And on an even bigger scale, this whole planet is impermanent. And our sun is impermanent, and all the stars and all the planets are impermanent. I read on Wikipedia that in about 5 billion years, our sun will run out of hydrogen and will start expanding and it become a red giant. And at that point, planet Earth will be so hot that it will melt into a large lump of lava, nothing else. So all this might give rise to a couple of questions, like for instance, isn't this all rather obvious? Like, isn't it like really obvious that everything changes? Like if I went to the closest street and waited there until the first random person walked by and asked them, like, what do you think? Is there anything permanent or not? Or is everything changing? They would reply that, of course, everything is changing. There's nothing permanent. But actually, there's a big difference in understanding something on an intellectual level and some deeper experiential level. And if we understand the truth of impermanence on an intellectual level only, it doesn't have much of an effect on our life and on our well-being. But if through meditation practice and practice in general, we come to understand impermanence on a much deeper, more like cellular level, that will start having a big effect on our well-being. So the next question you might have in mind is that, so, like, what's the benefit here? Like, what is the benefit of talking about impermanence, reflecting on impermanence, practicing with impermanence. Like, well, why is it for? What is it for? And there are several different kinds of advantages to this. Like, you might recall that in the story I told you, King Solomon asked for a ring that makes a happy man sad. And the ring said, "This too shall pass." But I don't think that the Buddha actually agreed with the story in that particular detail, and I don't actually agree with the story either. I think, like, if I had a ring that said, "This too shall pass," and if I was happy, like, my personal experience is that if I remember that my happiness is impermanent, very fragile actually, that makes me appreciate the happiness all the much more. Maybe feel it more fully, to enjoy it more. And years ago, I heard a Dharma talk by American teacher called Brian Lesage. Just happens to be living in the same city where Greg is living in Arizona. And even though it's been many years ago, this story really stuck with me, because to me it has, like, tells about something very important. And Brian told in the Dharma talk that when he got married, he and her wife went on a honeymoon, you know, some, like, really nice holiday location. And they were standing there on the beach, the two of them. And they were reflecting together on the fact that their relationship will not last, that their marriage will not last. And the point wasn't that they were really depressed or wanting to be depressed or gloomy, but the point was that they wanted to really cherish their relationship while it lasted and while they were happy. Hopefully they are still happy, I don't know. But it was clear to both of them that it will not last. Either they will drift away from each other in life, or one of them will die and the relationship will end. And they wanted to enjoy it as much as possible, and that's why they reflected on impermanence. Another benefit that comes from reflecting impermanence and practicing with it, that it helps to find some ease when we are facing difficulties in life. So in the story, this part was that the ring makes a sad happy. The ring makes a sad man a happy man. And this is what I agree with more, and I'm sure that the Buddha agreed with more too. So for instance, if we are depressed, it's easy to think that, well, for instance, I've been depressed for the past 2 months. I've just been depressed. But if we are looking at our experience more carefully, every moment, what we are probably going to find that is that their feeling of depression is not there all the time in every moment. Like, it can be there part of the time, but sooner or later there is a moment without depression. There might be even a moment of happiness, moment of pleasure, moment of anger, and then again moment of depression. So it's not as constant as we might think if we are just thinking about our lives in terms of, like, concepts and thoughts on that conceptual, intellectual level. And even the feeling of depression is probably going to be different at different times, like stronger or milder, or different flavor of depression be felt in different parts of the body. And it's... concepts can be so risky sometimes, like the reality is so complex, so rich, that it can never be accurately described by any concepts. So sometimes if we use concepts, and of course we need to use concepts in order to be able to live in this life, but sometimes that makes us suffer more than needed. Another example of this making a sad man a happy man is that, like for instance, anxiety. Like for some of us, anxiety is more or less common state of mind, common experience. And it's generally unpleasant, and sometimes it might feel like we need to do anything in order to make it go away, or to not feel it, or to forget about it, or fix it, or something. And we might put a lot of mental and physical energy in trying to avoid it, or fix it, or escape from it. But actually, and sometimes we really need to take action and do something. But sometimes it might be helpful to reflect that if we are feeling anxious and we don't do anything at all, we just sit and wait, the anxiety will keep changing. Maybe it will get stronger a bit, then it might get milder a bit. And sooner or later it will disappear altogether, even though we didn't do anything special about it. It's just not possible in this world that something will last forever. That doesn't happen. So in this way, reflecting on impermanence might give us some confidence that we are going to get over this if we are just patient enough and wait. And this principle is also used in mindfulness-based addiction recovery. Like if we have an addiction for something, or just a craving for something, be it heroin or chocolate or anything in between, we might have this like desire to get it, and the desire to get it might get stronger and stronger, and as we think about it more and imagine getting it. And but if we just sit and wait and don't do anything about our desire, we don't go get it, sooner or later it will start getting milder, like a wave that first gets stronger. And then it starts getting milder and milder, decrease and disappear altogether. And it's gone. We never had to take that chocolate, but the desire for it is not there anymore. We waited long enough. And of course it's easier to say than do, but in theory this is how it works. And finally, one more benefit to reflecting on impermanence and practicing with impermanence is that when we are experiencing something pleasant, like a nice state of mindfulness or calm or happiness, there's a tendency to cling to it and really hold tight and want it to be there forever. And as we know, it won't be there forever. It will disappear sooner or later, no matter how much we are trying to hold on to it. But if we have deeply internalized the teaching on impermanence, we know that it's going to disappear and we are not going to suffer so much when it happens. I have a quote, famous quote by the Thai teacher Ajahn Chah, whom Greg mentioned at some point. Ajahn Chah said, "You say, 'Don't break my glass.' Can you prevent something that's breakable from breaking? If it doesn't break now, it will break later on. If you don't break it, someone else will. Whenever its time is up, it will break." Develop this kind of understanding. Use this glass, look after it, until when, one day, it slips out of your hand. Smash! No problem. Why is there no problem? Because you saw its brokenness before it broke. So again, reflecting on these kinds of things is not supposed to be making you depressed. If it is making you depressed, you probably could be reflecting on something else. The purpose of these teachings is not to make you feel worse. You're all gloomy and depressed when you finally get out of but not just to acknowledge that not teachings might not be appropriate for everybody in every situation, in every time of their lives. So if you feel that something is not working for you, please let go of it and forget about it. But my personal experience and that of many others is that reflecting on this is actually going away from depression. This, like, we are not giving up on things and stop trying. But like at home, my partner, who is also a practitioner, a long-term practitioner, we have this phrase we use often when something breaks or changes. We say, "Anicca iski." Anicca iski jälleen. And it's really not a problem. Like, it's like, that's how it is. Anicca is here again. And it's been to be expected all the time. And we've been enjoying whatever it was as much as we could until it's no longer there. Also, once I was working in a place where I had a really good boss. She was like perfect boss. It was hard to imagine that nobody could, like anybody could be a better boss than she was. And at the same time, I knew that it's inevitable that she will be leaving one day. That she's not gonna stay forever, or I'm not gonna stay forever, but it's gonna end anyways, she being my boss. And then a few years passed, and one day I found out that she is going to leave. She's going to switch jobs. And of course, it was a little sad to be losing her, but it wasn't a big deal. And I think it was because of my practice and because I had kind of understood the whole time that this is going to end sooner or later. So it didn't feel like a catastrophe of any kind. The Buddha has said, "Better than 100 years lived without seeing the arising and passing of things is one day lived seeing their arising and passing." So to rephrase, the Buddha said that it's better to live one day seeing the impermanence of things than to live 100 years and not see the impermanence of things. So that's quite a claim. I mean, I have been talking about benefits of seeing impermanence, but is it really that important, like one day versus 100 years? And I think it probably is that important? And one way of looking at this, there are many ways of looking at this, but one way of looking at this is to look at the Four Noble Truths. And Greg started talking about the Four Noble Truths in his first Dharma talk, where he was talking about dukkha, which is, can be translated as suffering, unsatisfactoriness, stress or distress. And he was talking about the First Noble Truth, which is that there is dukkha in life. I was thinking of revealing the second and the third noble truth to you tonight. And the second noble truth says that dukkha is caused by unskillful desire, that the origin of dukkha is unskillful desire. And then the third noble truth says that we can find freedom from dukkha by finding freedom from the causes of dukkha, which is unskillful desire. So in order to become free of dukkha, we need to become free of the causes of dukkha. And so what is unskillful desire that's so central here, causing the dukkha? Unskillful desire could be expressed as we want things to be other than they are. So we might be wanting something that's not here, we might be wanting that state of no thoughts, or at least little less thoughts, or maybe that stress-free state, relaxed state, joyful state, ecstasy and rapture that Marie talked about yesterday. We might be wanting coffee or dessert or a new job or a new partner. And we also might be wanting to get rid of something that's here. We might be wanting to get rid of pain, or that leg that has gone asleep, or restlessness, or worry or sleepiness, wanting to get rid of those. Wanting to get rid of some nasty person in our lives. Wanting to get rid of too hot air. And we might also cling to things. Clinging can be seen as a stronger form of unskillful or unwholesome desire. Like we have something nice and we cling to it. Like that nice meditative state, we cling to it and want to keep it there. So, if our understanding of impermanence is deep, it starts to make less and less sense to be reactive this way, to be struggling with our experience in this way, to be fighting with reality in this way, to be constantly wanting something else or wanting to get rid of something or really clinging to things. So actually, deep understanding of impermanence can really weaken this unwholesome desire and thereby weaken dukkha. So another way to put this is that understanding impermanence, we stop seeking happiness in the wrong places. We are seeking happiness, all of us, in our own way, we are seeking happiness. And we have different ways of doing that. Some of those ways might be more skillful, some of those ways might be less skillful. But we are all doing our best with the wisdom we have, with the understanding we have. And one way of trying to find happiness is really try to get things that are not here yet and get rid of things that are here now. But there's this illusion of happy ever after. Like, if I just got this thing, I would be happy ever after. Like, it's obvious when you hear about this, or when I talk about this, that of course there's no happy ever after. Like in those stories for children, like, you know, the knight wins the, like, kills the dragon and gets the princess and gets to be the king and gets to rule over the whole country and they all live happily ever after. But that's kind of a still image. Like, nothing is gonna happen after that. The princess found the princess and the dragon is dead and everybody's celebrating. But of course in real life there's gonna be something happening after that. Like, change is everywhere in relationships and people getting born and others dying. And but for some reason, even though it's clear that this sort of thing is not possible in life, we might live in a way like it was. And really think that if I got to this school I really want to go, then it would be great. If I got this job, if I got this thing, maybe, then it would be happy ever after. And myself, ever since I started practicing and sitting retreats, I found this practice and these teachings to be extremely important. And it was clear to me from the beginning that this is what could be more important than this. And I kept on practicing and sitting retreats. And I was maybe secretly dreaming sometimes of becoming a meditation teacher one day, not telling anybody about it for many, many years. And then somehow it happened that I ended up in a meditation teacher training. As I told you, I've been actually teaching for quite a few years, but with this teacher training I will be I will be able to teach silent retreats independently. And it was so interesting to see for me, like this thing that I had been dreaming of for a long time actually became a reality. But it was very far from a happy ever after situation. Like, it's so clear to me that this is what I want to be doing, and it's been so clear to me for a long time that this is what I want to be doing. But it's very far from happy ever after, I can tell you. So actually what seemed to happen, that after I got into the meditation teacher training, dukkha increased in my life in many ways. But you know, instead of it being a big disappointment to me, it's been more like interesting and even amusing. Like, well, life is really funny sometimes. Something like, somehow it's been like, it's been clear, I've been practicing so long and so much that I'd never imagined that it leads to any kind of permanent happiness. So, when our understanding of impermanence deepens, we are st- starting to get less reactive. Our mind is starting to get more equanimous, more balanced. And we start fighting, struggling with the reality less and less. It's not that we are becoming passive or anything. We are still wise, active beings in the world. But we are not wasting our energy in any kind of like struggle that leads nowhere. So, and maybe more and more often we find that we actually can be content with this very moment, with what's here right now, what we are experiencing in the body right now, what we are experiencing in the mind right now, what we are experiencing in the heart right now. It's actually possible to be content with that instead of waiting for something better, trying to get rid of something. And we come to understand that actually this very moment is the only moment we can ever be alive, the only moment where we can ever experience anything. The future is always in the future, and this present moment is the only moment we ever have. So why waste it struggling and trying to change it, get somewhere else? And as some of you might remember or not, the theme of this retreat is finding a true refuge. And as some of you might remember or not, Greg was talking about refuge a little bit in the very first evening when we arrived. So refuge could be translated Finnish as turvautuminen or turvapaikka, place of safety. And sometimes it can feel like we need to find a refuge from impermanence. Because it's all changing, we need to find some kind of a place of safety where we can be safe from all that impermanence. Kind of to protect ourselves from the impermanence. But in my personal experience, something quite strange has happened. Impermanence has become a refuge in itself, it feels like. And we all kind of know that we are not in control of life. We might have a sense that we are in control of a lot of that for maybe long periods of time. And we might really like that feeling, being in control of things, as many things as possible. But sooner or later we discover that it's not true. Sooner or later something major happens and we very painfully find out that we are not in control. We really are not in control. And what I find is that sort of surrendering into impermanence of things can be a great refuge in that kind of situation. Again, not giving up. If it works like that for you, don't try it. Not giving up, not becoming depressed. Surrendering into the impermanence can be a really great relief. Can really lead to a lot more well-being. A lot more ease. And Marie and Greg have both been talking about Ehipassiko, Kamansi, and I invite you all to do that. I've been telling about you impermanence and how it might affect your life. And it's for you to make that decision whether you want to start experimenting it in your life and see if it works for you in the same way. If it works for you as kind of promised. And that's the only way we have of working with these things. Like nobody can give a deep understanding as a gift to you. Like we all need to do this work individually. So, if you're interested in practicing with impermanence, what are some possible ways of doing that? For instance, now here on this retreat. So, one way is doing what we did at the beginning of this talk, just tuning into your sensations, like bodily sensations or hearing, and pay attention to impermanence. Just look at everything through the lens of impermanence. Pay attention to change. Notice the change wherever you see it. Make that the emphasis of your practice. Another way is to use mental noting that Greg has been talking about. Or actually, this is not quite the same thing. What I'm talking about here is labeling anything you experience as impermanence. So whatever it is right now, it could be like the feeling of moist on the back of my hand, feeling it, labeling it in my mind impermanent. I'm hearing some sounds, labeling it impermanent. I'm feeling some tightness in my stomach, labeling it impermanent, feeling some pain in my head, impermanent. Feeling a deep breath taking place, impermanent. And so on. Just like whatever you're experiencing, labeling it as impermanent and seeing what that does. Also, it doesn't need to be in the informal meditation practice. You can do it anywhere, anytime. You could do it while you're eating, like impermanent, while you're walking, impermanent, while you're looking around, impermanent, when you're going to the toilet, impermanent. And what you'll probably find is that it's really everywhere you look. It's one thing that's important to know is that your practice will change too and will keep changing too. Like it's not like you can at some point when you've been sitting enough retreats and reading enough books that you arrive at this perfect way of practicing that you will never have to change again. And it will work for you forever, for the rest of your life. That's unfortunately not the case. So, because everything else keeps changing, your practice must keep changing as well. Something that has been working really great for a while will at some point start working less well. And you need to keep finding new ways to practice, new ideas for practice. So, really, everything is in flux. And in case you might be interested in working with impermanence also after the retreat, I googled and I found out that they actually sell these rings online. this tool shall pass, and it's as low as $10 per piece. It's available for you in a few days. And I would like to end with a quote, a piece of the Diamond Sutra, which is an important text in Mahayana Buddhism. Thus, should you think of all this fleeting world, like a drop of dew or like a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. So let's sit quietly for a moment or two.